Welcome back, welcome back. Today's episode is with Richie. Richie is one of my professors. I was taking biochem class, and his class I really wanted to take as well. And his was online. It was advertised as hybrid, but his classes were in Sarasota, and I couldn't take his lectures, but they were mandatory. So I emailed him. I said, let me just try. I said, I noticed that your office is actually in Tampa. Can I take the class in Tampa, volunteer lectures, and take the exams in your office? He said yes. I was a little shocked because I was like probably 2 years into college at this point, and everybody had been like a jerk, right? Like professor wise. I remember walking into his office to take my first exam. He just handed me the exam. He said, you can sit right there and take it. He let me sit in my own like little office room thing outside. I was like, awfully trusting, but okay. And then I came to hand my exam in, and he told me to sit down. I said, what? He said, sit down, let's grade it together. Like, so are you going to let me like correct it? Like, I don't know, what's the point of this? But anyway, in my head, right? So I was like, this guy actually wants to teach. And his lectures were really fun. Second class I took was something neuro, like neuropsych. And he had said, how many people do you think we know? And I answered very stupidly, like hundreds. And he was like, no, do you know, like you can identify thousands, if not like millions of faces. And I was like, huh. Like tens of thousands. And I was like, it's like you can recognize a Kardashian. And I was like, oh, okay, like, that's true. Also, I'm Arab. That was a really stupid answer. We have at least 500 people that are going to come to our weddings. So years later, we reconnected. I came to Moffitt and started to work there, and then saw his name on an email. And I was like, what's he doing here? Initially, he had a dual appointment. And then over time, that changed. And he's just exclusively at Moffitt. It's nice running into him in the hallways. I learned so much about him in this recording because you really don't know people the way you think you know them. Like, especially, you know, as a professor, you're not asking him anything really other than, you know, can I get extra credit? So, yeah, he was definitely my favorite professor. I have a lot of respect for him. And now he wrote me one of my first letters of recommendation to get into med school in like probably 2013. Wait, here we are. 2025. So it's nice to be able to share those little wins with the people who were there from day one. I'm so excited that you guys get to learn a little bit about Richie and get to see his fun personality. He's a great guy, great to work with, probably great to work for. Not me advertising for Moffitt's biostats department. Anyways, hope you enjoy.
I try to teach my kids this as well, is that especially nowadays we're learning a professional track, is that the knowledge is not as valuable as having wisdom and learning about many different things and how different parts of life fit together.
I have realized that there's not one track, right, in life. And if you just stick to that one track, you come out as a very unidimensional person.
This goes into psychology and psychopathology. Ideas that I'll be buried alive. And that is actually a very irrational fear. Is
there
that
you
I'm gonna
go.
Wake
That's
up
perfect. Yeah.
My own coffin. I will wake up in my own coffin. That is a totally irrational fear. But it scares me just thinking about it.
When you interview people, what are you looking for?
Okay.
Is bridesmaids
like
on the list?
Bridesmaids? Actually, if bridesmaids is on, I will watch it, and my wife watches it too. That is one where she and I can just watch it over and over again. We always are like, well, we'll just watch it for a few minutes, and then we'll just see it through to the end. I think that's more valuable. And I think a physician with that kind of perspective, rather than just an encyclopedic knowledge of medicine, I think having wisdom is more valuable. And so I think you're going to be a great physician. I kind of can't wait to see how it goes, or what specialty you choose, or how that works.
You can't have access to patients unless you have a license and things like that. And so being able to interact with patients the way that I have is completely unique.
Yeah, excellent. I don't get to interact with patients, but I see them in the cafeteria.
Do you wish that you did? I mean, you taught psychology, right? You never worked in any other patient-facing practice, right?
Right. I was in graduate school for clinical psychology. So part of my training was working in a clinic doing psychological therapy, psychotherapy. But I decided that research was a better track for what I wanted to do, research and teaching. So I ended up not being patient facing at all. And so I really have not had much experience other than that in any patient-facing roles.
Do you miss the classroom? Do you miss teaching?
I do. I was just telling somebody this the other day because I teach these little seminars and one-off classes for different people. And I was teaching a class the other day on how people can get biostatistics support and what they need for statistics for their grants. When I was done, I was like, I really miss being in a classroom setting. I miss teaching people. I really enjoy my job now, so I wouldn't trade it to go back to a faculty position. But that part of it, I do miss. I really enjoyed teaching. So now when I do that occasionally, it sort of scratches that itch.
Yeah.
I would like to do it a little bit more.
Do you feel like anything that you were doing when you were teaching, you're still doing today with your staff, or is that completely different?
Well, somewhat it's the same, because on some level I was running a lab where we were doing research and I was working with a team collaborating. Huh. That's sort of what I do now. That part is similar. And because the content of what I taught was psychology, that's in every aspect of life. So a lot of the things that I learned and I was teaching in psychology, I use every day. I was talking to somebody the other day about artificial intelligence and the idea of neural networks. And a lot of those ideas come from cognitive psychology. Having taught cognitive psychology helps me to understand it, because I do not understand the computer science. That part is way over my head. But having an understanding of what intelligence is and how the brain works and how the brain processes information helps to understand the principles behind artificial intelligence.
I think you were one of my favorite, you were my favorite professor in college. I wish there were more classes that I could have taken when you were teaching, but you have such a way with getting information to students and in such a way that makes you love the class, even if it's something that you're not interested in per se. So I know that you're very busy, but I think you should totally explore doing teaching, maybe not in a traditional sense, because I think that's a whole other conversation we can get into. But, you know, like there's a lot of people that have courses online or they have YouTube and concepts and things like that. So that AI and cognitive psych overlap, you can create your own class and course based on that. And I think you should consider that.
Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate it. And it's a good idea. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm reading a book right now. It's called The Master Algorithm, and it's all about artificial intelligence. But it's more from the computer science side. So I'm trying to understand it more. I'm trying to learn more. Okay. My title, I'm actually getting a promotion in July to, it's called Director of Data Science Shared Resources.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Long overdue, I would say.
Thank you. But I feel like I really need to understand data science to earn that title. So I'm trying to read and do as much as I can to learn about what data science is, what artificial intelligence is, what machine learning is, so that I can do a good job of leading a group of data scientists.
Okay. Well, you're doing a great job already, but I think it's always good to expand. What's one thing that you think your current colleagues don't know about you that you feel comfortable?
What don't they know about me? A couple of weeks ago, and most people still don't know this about me, you've heard of Moffitt's Got Talent, the talent show?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was in the talent show a couple of weeks ago, and I recited a poem that I wrote.
Okay.
Even though that was in front of a lot of people at Moffitt, and the video of that presentation was sent out to Moffitt, I don't think anybody watches it, because no one still knows that I did that or that I do that.
So, well, now I'm going to watch it because I.
That is something people don't know about me, is that as a hobby, I do write poetry. And that was the first time I ever recited one of my poems in a public setting. I've read some to my family before, but that was the first time I had ever done that. So that's definitely something that no one knows. And I thought that I would be outed from that, but evidently either they saw it and it's so cringy that they don't want to say anything to me.
I doubt it.
Or they still don't know that about me. So
I think
we'll
they
see.
Still don't know it. But maybe after this, plus when I link them up, it's got talent, plus all that, we'll eventually all know. Do you have a specific genre that you write, or is it whatever you're feeling?
No, it is many different things. So some are serious. This one was specifically about Moffitt and the Moffitt community.
Okay.
I write a lot about my children and my family and just silly things. I wrote one about mowing the lawn.
Okay.
I wrote one about if you mow the lawn in the same direction all the way, it blows all the leaves into a pile. So instead of raking, you just do that. But
You
anyhow,
just, was that your
yeah.
message to your kids for how to mow the lawn? Or was that a
No, my
message to
kids,
your
I don't
wife that I
trust them
don't want
yet.
to do this?
Yeah, I don't trust them yet with the mower, even though they're all 13 or above. I still don't trust them with it. And I enjoy doing it. So, no, I still do it. And if they want to learn that way, that I'll teach them that way. So many
Good.
different
What's your
topics.
favorite place to write?
Place? My office at home. Yeah. I have a nice chair. It's comfortable. And my wife got me a little book. When we got married, she got me a book to write poetry. And at the time, I was writing maybe one per year. But in the last 2 years, I've been writing more. I read this book called Atomic Habits. The book Atomic Habits is all
I'm
about
listening to
how.
that.
Oh, you are listening to that? Awesome.
I am listening to it, yeah.
Anyhow, then you know it's all about if you get in the habit of doing a little bit of something every
Yeah.
single day, eventually you end up with a lot. So I've probably went from writing one or two a year to probably 20, 25 a year. And that's just because I work on it a little bit every day. So I may spend only 10 minutes in a day working on it, but it's fun.
It adds
And by the
up.
way, going back to tying it back into psychology and how the brain works, the brain is works better if you do, especially if it's a task that requires thinking or creativity, it's better if you give yourself a lot of time in between the actual work because you get ideas when you're not thinking about it or when you're sleeping, your brain is forming connections. So you may actually, even though if you're not writing, you're getting ideas for writing when you're sleeping or you're getting ideas for writing when you least expect it, like when you're mowing the lawn, things like that. So
I love that. When did you get into writing poetry?
I've done a little bit since I was in high school. And like I said, I've done it here and there, but I've done it a lot for the last 2 years. And again, it's because I read that book and I was like, you know
Okay.
what? I'm just going to work on this a little bit every day and see what comes of it. Like 50 poems later, I finally have a whole bunch.
I love it. Are you
Yeah.
going to do anything with them, or is it personal? Do you feel like you don't like sharing them with people?
It's mostly personal. Most of the time when I share the poems with people, I think it's so unexpected and I'm so in my own head that people don't get it the way I do.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's part of the art of writing a good poem is have people take your perspective. But
Yeah.
I think it's mostly for myself. It's mostly personal. I think if, I don't know. We'll see how things go. I did get positive feedback from the people that were at Moffitt's Got Talent. And I don't know if that
Okay.
was just because it was Moffitt's Got Talent and people were being supportive, but I did get some feedback that I think was objective and I think it was good.
Okay. What was the objective feedback?
Just that the poem captured the essence of Moffitt.
Okay.
Did you just thumb up? Did I thumbs up?
I don't know. It does that sometimes when people just. The
Yeah, I
other day I
think.
was doing this and hearts started flying. I was like, oh,
Yeah, Zoom does that too. It's like sometimes if I'm going like this, my hand will show up in Zoom.
oh my gosh. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't even know how to turn it off. I still don't know how to raise my hand in Zoom. I have to just like, I don't know how to use all those things. And I come from a computer background. My dad was a computer engineer. I've been putting
Oh,
computers
cool.
together and taking them apart since I was like 5, but still, I
Oh,
cannot
awesome.
figure out Zoom.
That is awesome. So you are very multifaceted.
I guess. I mean, I was raised with a dad that was, again, very into engineering. He was a very type A person. My mom, if type A was a person, she's the exact opposite. I don't know what that would look like. It's not type B, it's like something completely in its own realm. So I think I came out hybrid of the two in terms of interests and things like that. I really am glad. I'm not gonna lie. I'm glad that med school did not work out 12 years ago, because I think I would have been a completely different person. I wouldn't have met all the people that I've met. You grow as a person with the more people you interact with. You discover things about yourself, things that you can kind of spin in different ways. That's kind of why I'm doing this, is because I have realized that there's not one track, right, in life. And if you just stick to
Yes.
that one track, you come out as a very unidimensional person. And
Yes.
I love hearing from other people that have gone through that same thing. where society has told us if you don't follow and you're not like a physician with $1 million by 30, you've lost at life. And I'm like, I don't think that's what life is.
Yeah. Speaking of that, another book I recently read is called Think Again. And it talks a lot about that in the book, is that a way to be unhappy in life is just to think that there's only one way of doing things, one way of thinking about things. Career and life track is one of the things he uses as an example, that people often very early in life think that there's one way that you're supposed to do things. And whether or not that's how I intended my life to be, it didn't end up being that way.
Yeah.
I didn't read this book a long time ago, so I didn't know that the best path to happiness is to go wherever life takes you.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up being that way for me, too. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Things happen the way they're meant to be, and you can't fight it. You just have to go with it.
You end up miserable.
Do you mind if I ask you a couple questions?
I'd love that, yeah.
Okay, so can you tell me more about the podcast and how you got into it, and what is the main purpose of the podcast?
Yeah. So it really started just me and a friend were talking, and it was two different conversations. So the first one was, I was talking to a friend and I had sent him a voice memo, and he had said, I've been wanting to tell you this for a while. You probably can sing. I was like, I absolutely cannot sing. I can knock this out like right now. I promise you don't want to hear that. He's like, you have this voice that I think people would want to listen to. I'm like, okay, that's a very strange thing to hear or to receive. I'm not good at receiving things. But that kind of stuck with me for a little bit. I think in the back of my mind, I kind of pushed it away. I was like, oh, he's crazy. Like, I know, whatever. And then a few months later, I was talking to a friend and we were talking about work and just talking about how I was in that moment where I was like, okay, I don't know. Am I going to apply this year? Am I not going to apply this year? I was getting sick of the whole system, to be honest. We talked about Italy at the time, and I kind of, again, pushed that off to the side. We were talking about her career and how her career had taken a multiple different twists and turns, and how every country she ended up in each time brought her to something new each time. And she felt like she was behind because she was in her 30s and still didn't have what a traditional 30-year-old woman has: a husband, kids, house, all of those things. And I was like, no, but look at how fulfilled you are at the end of the day. Like, you're chasing something that you love, and this is something that not a lot of people know about. The other thing that was driving me crazy at that same time was I kept telling kids, stop majoring in biomedical sciences. I know you want to be a doctor. For the love of God, drop that degree and do something that you love. Because when you're on the flip side of it, you're like, I spent 4 years of my life doing something I didn't enjoy all of it. And you don't have to enjoy everything that you do. It's not that. But it's like, I didn't need that degree. I could have learned something. I could have majored in a language. Nobody tells you these things. When I was the eldest of immigrant parents, so I had no blueprint in front of me. They were very conservative. So they were like, even scared for me to go to USF from living in St. Pete my whole life. They were like, that's too far. Can you go to the community college here until you're older? Every delay in my life has happened because I was fighting that in a way while still respecting their norms, their cultures, and the things that make them feel safe. So it was like balancing those two, realizing that there's not a single path, and then really also realizing that people go into college and they have an idea of where they want to end up. They have that picture in their mind, but nobody ever thinks about the in-betweens, like what happens. And I wish that I had somebody that had told me that when I was in those shoes. So anytime I would do like a career fair, my school would ask me to come by or anything like that. That was my messaging to a lot of the kids. And they would be like, why? That's what everybody says. And, you know, my pre-med advisor said this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but your pre-med advisor is also not signing your entrance to med school. They're not actually guaranteeing anything for you. And I'm telling you, you could still go to med school and you can still go to dental school and you could still be all these things. Do something that makes you grow as a person, because I would rather have a physician that is more well-rounded treating me than somebody who's just tunnel vision and has never experienced anything, has zero empathy or understanding for the world and people that do different things in the world and things like that. So that's really what sparked this. I was like, okay. And then I thought, you have a voice that could maybe do something. I definitely can't sing and I don't want to. That's not going to deliver any messages. But I felt like this might be a fun way for me to talk to people and highlight people who may have not had somebody highlighting them, or people just don't know about your journeys. But I know because, you know, yeah. you've encountered these people over time. So that was kind of where this came from.
That's awesome. I agree totally that you have a great voice. And it's funny because I encounter people at Moffitt who have great voices. And going back to poetry, when I listen to how my voice sounds, I wish I could hire people to read my poetry because their voices sound so good. And if I could just teach them how to say it, I think it would sound better. Are you going to keep doing the podcast? Do you think you'll be able to keep it up? I know you're going to be extremely busy.
No, I think I am thriving on the chaos. I have never been as busy as I am this year. And it's been also the most fulfilling and just I'm at peace here that I've had, because I think everything I'm doing right now, I enjoy. And this doesn't feel like something that's taking time out of my day. It's something that I'm enjoying to do. You know, if it goes somewhere big, that's great. If it doesn't, I'm still having a good time. And I think if even one person just hears and feels like they've caught something from it, then I've done my job.
Yeah. Another thing I agree with, I think that your experiences and the diversity of your experiences is going to make you a better physician. So I think your advice to people to do something where they learn something unconventional that's not necessarily on the med school path. And I try to teach my kids this as well, is that especially nowadays where learning a professional track is that the knowledge is not as valuable as having wisdom and learning yeah. about many different things and how different parts of life fit together. I think that's more valuable. And I think a physician with that kind of perspective, rather than just an encyclopedic knowledge of medicine, mm-hmm. I think having wisdom is more valuable. And so I think you're going to be a great physician. I kind of can't wait to see
Thank you.
How it goes or what specialty you choose or how that works out for
I'm
you.
I'm excited. I'm very excited. I hope so. I appreciate that you said wisdom. You know, I always think of empathy and I don't think about the wisdom part, but I think that is something else that I feel like as a society we might be lacking, because I feel like we're lacking empathy as a society, but wisdom is a really good one. I haven't thought of that.
Well, as a researcher, which you've been for a long time, you understand how to think critically and how to think about alternative explanations for things. And you have been in a setting where you've been exposed to people mm-hmm. in extremely dire circumstances and very ill, mm-hmm. the family, the desperation. And so I think all of that contributes to a wisdom that you could not learn in a class. Just having the experience is what teaches you that.
I wish that was a universal requirement, right? That you have to go through a certain set of life hurdles before you can
yeah.
go out and do to others, right?
Yep.
But I guess that's how we get those experiences too, is from the people that haven't. And what brought you to psychology? How'd you get on that path to begin with?
That's a good question. Speaking of life's meandering paths, growing up, I loved the weather. I loved okay. meteorology, and I would watch the Weather Channel. That was my go-to. And so I thought that's what I wanted to be. And I still sometimes think that's what I want to be in the future. But
you would actually kill it. Like right now, you're very much, you could just put the screen behind you and I would watch.
Yeah.
But continue, sorry.
I went to school for this and I could not pass. I passed, but I could not get good grades in physics or calculus. And to get a degree in meteorology, you have to be really strong in those areas. And at the time, I was not as disciplined of a student as I would have been now. I was not disciplined enough to get through those classes, but I was doing well in my psychology classes. So I took the path of least resistance
yeah.
and I took psychology. I switched to a psychology major. I switched schools and I did really well in psychology. And I ended up working in a research lab with some excellent role models. And I wanted to be like them. So they all had PhDs and I wanted to do what they did. And that is what led me to graduate school in psychology. And like I told you earlier, I thought research was the best place for me. So I worked in jobs and research and I took the faculty position and I enjoyed doing that. So that's how I ended up in psychology.
Okay. And have you been in Florida your whole life?
No.
Okay.
Started out in Maryland mm-hmm. and my first 11 years were in Maryland. Then I would say my formative years, where I feel like I really grew up, was in South Carolina. From when I was 11, I think I lived in South Carolina. And then I moved to Tampa for graduate school in 1997. So I've been here for longer than I've been anywhere else, and more than half my life. So I've been here a long time, but no, I haven't been here forever.
Okay. Does Tampa feel like home now, or is South Carolina still home?
Yeah.
Tampa's home.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. It feels like home, mainly because, like I said, I've lived here for more than half my life and met my wife here, got married, had 5 kids here. So most of my fond life memories are here.
Yeah. How old are your kids?
My youngest just turned 13 last weekend, and my oldest will be 22 in September.
Oh, they're all close in age. I love that.
Yeah, they're pretty close.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. Do they all still live in Tampa, or are they going to school far?
My oldest son goes to school in Connecticut, and my second son goes to University of Florida. My oldest son is in New York for an internship this summer, so he's not home, but my second son is home. The next two are in high school, and then the fifth one is going to be in eighth grade.
Nice. And so you have how many girls, how many boys?
They're all boys.
All boys. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You have a basketball team there.
We have a basketball team. It's funny, when we had four, everybody would say, oh, you just need one more and you'll
just
have a basketball
team.
And I would say, what about me? I said, I am
You're the fifth player.
We have a basketball team. Yeah, I'm the player coach. But then we had five. And so, yes, we do have a basketball team. And they all play basketball. Some are really good and some are okay.
Okay. We'll let them figure out who's okay and who's
Yeah.
Okay. Do you play basketball?
Yeah, I played a lot of basketball growing up. I was small, so I didn't play in high school or college or anything like that, but I played with my friends. And yes, I enjoyed it very much. I think I'd say that was probably my favorite sport growing up. My favorite sport to watch or coach, which I've done a lot of because I have all these boys, is baseball. I played baseball and I coached a lot of baseball.
Okay. Nice. I love that they all came out athletic, though, because sometimes you don't get them all in the same boat. You have like half and half.
Yeah, they have varying degrees of athleticism. I'd say two are very naturally athletic, and they're probably the two with the least interest in competing, which is
that's
disappointing
how it always
to me,
is.
But not too disappointing. And then our fourth son, he doesn't like to run at all. So that takes away a lot of sports.
A lot of
But he is a golfer now, and he loves golfing, and he golfs all the time. And golf is a sport where you don't have to run at all. So it's perfect.
Some would say it's not a sport, but but it is entertaining, and it does stimulate the mind.
Yeah. He gets exercise. He walks the course.
He doesn't
ride in the cart.
Okay, all right. He's a walker. What do you think the biggest shift has been in all your years of teaching, like students when you started versus students when you're wrapping up?
Yeah. Well, so my primary teaching years were, there was 11 years where I was at USF Sarasota Manatee, and I did most of my teaching. I wouldn't say there's a whole lot of difference. I don't know. I'm still pretty removed from it. Now, obviously, there's so much more digitally based. So I think there'd be differences now. I don't know how it used to be. I know that within classes, there was always a wide spectrum of the amount of internal motivation for doing well. So you have students like yourself who are very internally motivated and work hard and study. And then you have other students who, like we were mentioning before, are probably immature and young and just following a path that they're not really thinking too much about. You have different levels of responsibility that people take. So I'd have some students that would, when I'd get my evaluations, I would say best evaluations were when you get a strong evaluation from someone that didn't do so well. So like a strong evaluation from someone who got a B or a C really means a lot. Someone that says something nice about your teaching and what they learned, even if they didn't get a good grade. And then some people who didn't get good grades would blame the instructor and the class. I always wanted to say to them, well, there were 10 people that got A's in the class, and it was the same exact class that you had. I don't think I ever noticed much of a change over time, but within a moment of time, within a class, there's always a wide spectrum of students and their motivations and their level of responsibility, how hard they work. There's always those differences within class.
What was the best and the worst experience that first come to mind while you were teaching?
When I was teaching, one student called me an a-hole.
Why? To your face in an evaluation?
Yeah, it wasn't literally to my face. He said it under his breath to me. I don't exactly remember why. I think he might have been cheating or something. And I think I told him to keep his eye on his paper or something like that.
Oh my God.
My best, probably I won a Teacher of the Year award in, I don't even remember what year it was, but it was one of my years at USF Sarasota mm-hmm. Manatee. And the reason that is, I just am very happy. It was voted on by students. So mm-hmm. that's why that meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
That is probably my happiest moment teaching. I think of other things. It's always great to hear stories. I think running into you here at Moffitt and seeing people being successful is always cool. There's actually a student at my son's school whose mom I taught at USF.
Yeah.
And it's just cool running into people mm-hmm. and seeing where they are in life. And the fact that they remember you and that you had an impact on their life, that's very gratifying.
Yeah. I'm sure there are a lot out there that may have not expressed it or you don't know about, but your classes were definitely memorable and you cared. I remember after taking your classes, anytime I would recommend your classes to anybody, I would preface them with, he's going to expect you to work. Like, I'm not telling you this. Your classes were some of my hardest classes. They weren't easy by any means, but you were fair. Your exams were fair. And you challenged us, I think, in a way that wasn't demeaning. But I remember once you agreed to let me take my exams in your office, that first class I took with you, because I couldn't go down to Sarasota. And you were grading one of my exams right after. And I was like, oh my God, he's going to grade this in front of me. Like, no, that's like a lot of pressure, but okay. And then you got to a problem and you just kind of looked at me and you were like, this was wrong, but can you tell me why? And I'm like, are you going to give me credit if I get it right? You're like, no, but can you explain why you got this wrong? I wasn't upset. It was memorable. It was like, okay, you actually cared. You weren't just, okay, yeah, you can take this exam, whatever, and then go. You were like, no, sit down and we're going to grade it together. And at first I thought, this was my first time meeting you. I was like, why is he doing this? What does he want to just grill me on the spot? I don't understand. And then I realized, no, you're like, okay, let's just have this conversation right now. And yeah, I don't remember what I got on that exam. I don't think I did well, but I didn't walk away upset either. And then I kept signing up for your classes. So clearly I was enjoying it. But
well, thank you. That's very, very good. That kind of thing are the happier moments in teaching. So thank you.
Yeah. So what's the difference between teaching and then what you do now? I know you said they're very similar, but what do you feel like is a big difference between them?
Yeah. So right now, a lot of what I do is I try to find the right people to do whatever data analysis investigators need for their projects. So they actually know way more than I do about statistics and bioinformatics. So I don't do that much teaching, just making sure people have what they need to succeed. So it is very different. The level of interaction is very different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I'm 2 hours into the day and you're really the first person I talk to
today. Yeah.
So I do a lot of emailing and do a lot of the work electronically. I do have many meetings just because of working with many different investigators. So there's a big difference
mm-hmm.
in what it is that I'm doing. I think when I'm teaching people now, it's more teaching people about the processes
mm-hmm.
and making sure people do things in a way that is rigorous and reproducible, and teaching people, I don't want to say teaching people professionalism, but ways to improve professionalism. We have a very professional group,
mm-hmm.
but just giving people little advice on that. But no, as far as content, they teach me. I learn a lot. They know way more than I do. Most of them do about statistics. I know mm-hmm. a little bit more, I think, about research design and how to approach research questions than many of the people I work with. But as far as programming and actual understanding of the many different statistical techniques, they're way ahead of me.
Okay. What do you feel like in all your mentoring, because you've mentored students, you've mentored staff, I'm sure you've mentored other faculty as well over time. What do you think was something that kind of taught you a lesson throughout all of that Like something maybe you did that you would have taken back or you would have done differently?
I would say there aren't too many things that I regret doing because even when I make a mistake, I learn. But there are some things that are such big mistakes that you really wish. I would say there are hiring things that when you hire the wrong person, that can be very difficult and regrettable. And so I think you learn a lot from doing that. Your questioning is making me think of different things now. And so now I would say my mentorship and my what people are learning from me is leadership. So I started out here at Moffitt when I left teaching at USF Sarasota Manatee. I was the manager of the biostatistics shared resource, or we called it the biostatistics core. And that was my first time actually being a boss, like where I had people directly reporting to me. And since then, biostatistics merged with bioinformatics. So that doubled the size of the group. And now I'm having this new position, but now I have leaders. It's not just statisticians who report to me, but leaders who report to me. And so my mentorship is moving toward leading and the best ways to lead. And a lot of the same things that you just mentioned about teaching are what's important in leadership, and that's caring. Knowing either your students or your staff, knowing who they are, knowing what their goals are, where they want to take their careers, what they are doing outside of work. And that also ties into what I was telling you earlier about learning about people's biography and their background and their hobbies. It all ties together. And so I think that that is probably the biggest overlap between teaching and mentorship and leading, all those things. There's some overlap there.
Yeah. When you interview people, what are you looking for?
When we're hiring people? So that's one thing I've learned a lot about over the years is that I think when I first started, I'd want to hire the person that was the smartest biostatistician. But now what we want to hire is someone who's competent at biostatistics, but is highly driven, is humble. So they have humility in their work and just people that are good. They're socially intelligent. So they are good at communicating. They're good at collaborating. They're good at empathy. They can work through difficult situations. They can work with demanding people. So it's more of those psychology, the psychological skills, I think, is what we're looking for when we're interviewing people, what we're hiring people. We want people to be a good fit for our culture and also competent at whatever content area we need them for, whether it be statistics or bioinformatics, all those things. Everybody has to fit in culturally.
How do you tease that out in the interview? Are there like key questions you ask? Is it just a feeling you get?
Yeah, it's both. We ask, because I have the least content knowledge, I usually ask the broad questions about some of these intangible skills. And then we have people who interview and can ask more technical questions. And really how people answer questions tells us a lot. When we interview people, we have them meet with their colleagues. They'll meet with investigators. They'll meet with faculty here in the biostatistics and bioinformatics department and all of the leaders in our group, so that everybody can get a feel. And also we get input from the administrative assistants who schedule all of their itineraries and the HR people who talk to them, because we want to get a complete picture of who this person is and how they talk to people at different levels and how flexible they are and those kinds of things. So we're trying to get as much information as possible.
Is there anybody that you've hired? I know you said in general, when you have like a hire that just doesn't work out, but is there somebody that you've hired that you had zero idea and you thought they were going to be this perfect person and came out to be the opposite? Has that ever happened?
I wouldn't say that extreme. So for a long time, and I don't know who's going to watch this, but this is going to speak to my ego. The people that weren't working out in our group, they weren't people that I hired. But then over time, there have been a couple of people that I've hired.
Background. So you should be better at hiring. I would be concerned if you weren't.
I hope so. There are a couple people that have not worked out as well. And actually what has happened, fortunately, is a lot of people self-select out. So it's true. I think if they have a sense that it's not working out, they will haven't had to fire anyone. And sometimes people will just leave because it's just not a good fit for them. And that's another reason why we have such comprehensive interviews, is we want people to have a good idea about whether they're going to be a fit or not before they make the decision to come to us. So yeah, sometimes some of the hires have not worked out as well, but nobody has been like
a crazy,
well, you know what? I'll take that back.
Ordeal.
We've had a couple of contract people who, I don't want to get too specific, but they were working on areas that were sort of tangential to what we do. And now other departments are actually doing these things, but we were doing them at the time. And so we were hiring contract people. And one guy, I used to go home to my wife and be like, I'm really worried about this one person, because I was like, he felt like someone that if there was a workplace violent incident,
oh God,
you wouldn't be surprised. Nobody would say, oh, I never saw it coming from him. He actually did something. I'd be like, yeah, I kind of saw that.
That checks out.
He quit one day on the spot, like no 2 weeks notice, wow. No nothing. He just said, I think I'm done working here. And people occasionally tell me that. And I say, okay, when is it that you are leaving? He's like, right now. I'm leaving right now. And so it sort of left us in the lurch as far as the work goes. I was very relieved. I was like, okay, fine.
You took care of that. I hope. Go on.
Please get out as fast as you can.
We've had quite a few. I think on the clinical side, we get a whole host of things. I think especially in the research world, you have it as kind of a stepping stone for something else. And so you get a wide range of people, entry level, people that have been doing it forever, people that want to change their career 30 years later, stuff like that. And we've had quite a few. Falling asleep for no reason, feet up on the desk, Netflix on, blanket, ignoring patient calls. People straight up telling you, I'm not going to deal with that.
Yeah. So I will make a confession, and this along the lines of what people may not know about me, is I do take about a 5-minute nap every day. And I was in a cubicle for a long time, and it made it very difficult. But now I'm in an office where I can shut the door. And I don't know, after lunch, it feels like narcolepsy would feel like, I would imagine. I can't even help it. But it's only like 3 minutes, 5 minutes is all I need, and I'm good to go for the rest of the day.
I don't think that's anything bad. I know that people nap in SRB in those little chairs by the window. That's definitely a napping spot. When I was entering data, I haven't been able to do this in a while, but when I was entering data, I mastered the art of like falling asleep like that at your desk. So I was able to do that. I would just like, and then nod off. And then the minute I nodded off, I'm like, all right, I just need to go grab a coffee and I'll be good. But it's okay. As long as at the end of the day, the stuff gets done.
I think it helps. I have to fight it sometimes if a meeting is scheduled at the same time. It's not like a scheduled thing for me or a planned thing. Mm-hmm. It's usually about 1 o'clock, between 1 and 2. If it happens, then it makes my day better.
I love that. I did read that for the most efficient naps, you're supposed to drink your coffee first or drink a shot of espresso. And you can tell me this, if it's true or not, on a chemical level. But you drink the coffee first, then you take a 20-minute nap, and by then the caffeine's kicked in and you're good.
I mean, that makes sense, because the caffeine's not hitting your bloodstream for a few minutes, and it will make sure that you wake up, and that when you wake up, you're not groggy. Because there are occasions where I sleep more like 10, 20 minutes, and then
it's worse.
I'm not in good shape. Because, it's like the stages of sleep that you've gone a little too deep, too far, and it's hard to get out of it. But I don't eat or drink anything with caffeine in, except for chocolate. I eat chocolate.
Sometimes. Okay.
So I think it helps me to wake up naturally more easily. And by the way, because I have no tolerance for caffeine. No, I was a caffeine addict in college, and I started realizing, you know what? If I don't drink enough Coke, then I get these massive headaches. So I just went cold turkey. And now, like, if I have to stay awake, and even the smallest amount of caffeine will totally wake me up. So if I'm driving late at night and I'm sleepy, 1/2 of a Coke and I'm good for a few hours. So
that's awesome.
It's helpful.
Okay, what's a conspiracy theory you kind of believe? Or maybe you fully believe, I don't know.
Conspiracy theory. That question caught me off guard. I'm not really into conspiracies.
I'll give you mine and then they'll see if that sparks for you.
Okay.
Okay. Have you heard the conspiracy that Kanye West that we see now is not actually Kanye West?
No, I have not heard that one.
Go on a rabbit hole, deep dive into that, and look at old Kanye West versus new Kanye. It looks like a different person. And I have never been one to ever believe any of this stuff. I don't know that I believe that Hollywood and all of this is like running the world behind the scenes kind of thing. Maybe they are, I don't know. I'm not of that category. But seeing the personality shifts and then seeing physically who his kid looks like, and when you look at the new pictures of him and the old ones, it's actually interesting. So go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, that is not mine. I didn't know about that one. I don't have an answer, but I will say that there are conspiracy theories, and your idea did spark this in me. There are conspiracy theories that I hope are true, like that some of the dead musicians or dead movie stars or whatever are actually alive, that this was their way of getting out of the limelight. I think that would be really cool, but not going into any of those rabbit holes.
Okay, all right. What's an irrational fear you have?
Irrational fear. First, I have to think about what I am afraid of. I don't know. There's some really dark
Okay.
things. Like,
Dark things?
I'll wake up in the middle of the night and just have the, this goes into psychology and psychopathology, ideas that I'll be buried alive. And that is actually a very irrational fear, is that
There
I'm going
you
to
go.
wake
That's
up
perfect.
in my own coffin. I will wake up in my own coffin. That is a totally irrational fear, but it scares me thinking just thinking about
You're
it.
getting uncomfortable. I can see it. What sparked this? Are
Yeah,
you
in
like a
fact,
horror
it's
movie
so much so
person?
that I think I'm going to put in my will that I want to be cremated just so that doesn't
Just so
happen.
that doesn't happen. Okay. All right. Are you a horror movie junkie or no?
I used to like them a little bit, but when we had children, life was already so on edge and so nerve-wracking that pretty much anything beyond a Disney movie was too much at the time. So slowly getting into more of that, but I'm not into true horror movies. Like I watched the trailer to The Nun, and just watching that, I feel like gave me nightmares.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not a horror movie.
Want to be unnecessarily scared. Being scared is aversive to me,
I
so I
like
don't
that.
want to
I'm
be
scared of being
unnecessarily
scared. That's like never say never.
Yeah.
Okay, if you could DJ and also have a background show all the time for all your staff, what would it be? Like, what channel on Spotify are we going on?
I have started to create a playlist with all of my different. This is probably going to be way more of an answer than you had bargained for.
No, I'd love to hear it.
I'm sure everybody thinks their musical interests are eclectic, but I have a very diverse playlist of all my favorite songs that I have on one playlist. But each day, my wife probably thinks it's a little bit on the spectrum, but each day I listen to a different, like, Pandora station. So, and I usually do it when, because I make dinner. I usually make the cook at our house. So I make dinner. And so I like listening to music. So on Mondays, I listen to Tom Petty radio. So not just Tom Petty, but Tom Petty radio. So it's all the music like Tom Petty. Tuesday, it's The Cure radio. Wednesday, it is Allman Brothers radio. I don't know what I listen to. On Thursdays, I usually don't cook. But Fridays, I listen to Bob Marley radio. Saturdays, I listen to the Ramones radio. And then when I'm running or exercising, I listen to Bee Gees radio. So it is different. And my kids say it's all the same to them. So it may not be all that eclectic, but to me, they're of music. It's mostly rock music. I do listen to some country music, not much. I listen to a little bit of rap music, not much. All the rap music I listen to is from the 90s or
I was
80s.
gonna say, like old rap, I'm not into the new stuff.
Yeah, me too.
I can't listen to the new stuff. Is there a show, like a comfort show that you have that's always on in the background?
I have different go-to comfort shows, and again, it depends on the mood. I watch way more TV than you would expect, just because I consider myself a busy person, but I do watch it. It's like Atomic Habit. I watch a little bit of TV every day, so it ends up being a lot. But if I really just want a comfort show, it's probably like House Hunters, something like that on HGTV. I'll watch something on the cooking, the Food Network, like Chopped is a show I watch on the Food Network. I can watch Seinfeld. I've watched them all. I've probably watched them all multiple times. I can watch that over and over again. Those are my comfort shows, TV that I watch. But there's comfort movies that I watch, and this drives my wife crazy. Is like, if A Few Good Men is on, I will watch that no matter what. Like, I
It's a
can
good
watch
one.
that 100 times. I don't know why. I just watch it. My Cousin Vinny. And these are not even the best movies. I just don't know why. I can just sit there and watch it.
Okay.
Moneyball
Is
is like
Bridesmaids
that.
on the list?
Bridesmaids. Actually, if Bridesmaids is on, I will watch it, and my wife watches it too. That is one where she and I can just watch it over and over again. We always are like, well, we'll just watch it for a few minutes, and then we'll just see it through to the end.
Okay, good. I'm glad. That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
This
Bridesmaids
will make or
is great.
Break my opinion on you.
Oh, boy.
What did you think of Everything Everywhere All at Once?
I did not see that movie.
Okay, watch it,
and I hope
I'll
that
decide
doesn't
how I feel at you.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen it. I've watched a lot more Oscar movies this year than in previous years. Now that the kids are getting older, we're able to watch more current movies. For a while, we were totally into Pixar and Disney.
Yeah, which is always good.
Yeah.
Those never get old.
Those are good movies.
Okay. Anything that you want to ask me?
Anything else? Let's see. Well, I did ask you about the podcast, and you told me about your career. What are your family aspirations, or do you have any?
I think,
I don't even know your personal family situation, and we don't have to get personal.
No, it's okay. I don't mind.
Curious.
So I'm the eldest of four. I very much am the older sister in everybody's life. So I'm not going to lie, I'm tired. If I'm going to start my own personal family, it's going to have to be somebody that's going to come into my life that's going to make it a little bit easier. Yeah. So in terms of relationships, not in one, open to it completely. And of course, would love to have a partner at some point in my life. I don't have a timeline on it. I don't
that's
have
nice.
Kind of a, if it happens, it happens at the right time, the right person, sure. The past few years, I've just been traveling a lot. Work's been a lot. I was more focused on kind of streamlining my life and figuring out what I want to do and how I want to spend the rest of my life, what that looks like. And I think in the past few years, I've gotten to a point where I'm completely content, but also completely content with not planning anymore, right? Like I'm going with planning what you can within reason and leaving everything else up to the universe to figure out when it's meant to be. So I guess that's kind of family aspirations.
Yeah. Another question, this just sort of popped in my head. How close is, and I'll tell you why I'm asking this question, is the Jordanian community in the Tampa Bay area, is it a small community or is it large? Because my son's soccer coach is Jordanian, and I just didn't know if you...
It's pretty
big.
There's
like thousands of Jordanians.
There's thousands, yeah. So I don't know if you know, like, U.S. population is a quarter Muslim. At least it was when I was in school. And then of that, I would say half would be probably Arab. And so that's just students. There's a huge Middle Eastern population in general, especially in the Temple Terrace area. I mean, you see 56 and Fowler. You think you're in Jordan or Lebanon or something. So
yeah, I live in Temple Terrace.
Yeah, so you see all the...
Yeah, yeah. In fact, this coach took us to a new shawarma place. There's lots of Middle Eastern food available in Temple Terrace.
Yes. Yeah, you'll never be short on that. But yeah, so it's a big community. We all know each other, which is like a good and bad thing because you feel like you go out to a coffee shop and you're like, okay, before we start speaking, let's look around. And I have friends that will switch to Arabic. And I'm like, that's actually worse because now you're guaranteeing that the older people are also going to understand us. Switch back to English. So yeah, it's a big community. And when you grow up there, I was born in St. Pete, grew up between St. Pete and Tampa. So I've been in the Tampa Bay area my entire life. So yeah.
Well, this guy's name is, his name is, I don't know if this was his given name, but his name is Mike.
His name is definitely not Mike. It's probably Muhammad.
I didn't think so.
I mean, I know the last name, but that's a very generic. That's, you just said Mike Smith to me. So I'll have to.
Okay. All right. Well, he owns a tree trimming company.
Okay. Last question I have for you. And then if you have any questions for me, let me know. Okay. Any advice that you want to leave people with? Either a one-liner or anything?
I feel like this whole conversation has been good advice, whether it be, especially when we were talking about the different paths that people can take in life. I think that what you said about gaining different experiences. I think that's the best advice I would give to anyone, is live as much of life in different parts of life as you can. So whether it be obviously with work, but education, learning as many things as possible, volunteering, and not just volunteering for the sake of doing good for the community, but volunteering to learn about different parts of the community. I mentioned that I coached a lot of sports. I met many, many people, and I learned a lot just from doing that. Be with me and our kids when you have opportunities in the schools to volunteer. Do those things and read a lot. Work on different hobbies. Learn languages. I know this is all very broad and idealistic, but really, the more different things you can do in life, I think the richer it is, and the more you can contribute to whatever it is you're doing, working or teaching or doing research.
No, I love that.